Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I am thrilled. This is someone I've wanted to have on the show for ages and ages and ages, and just for whatever reason, never happened. And my guest, Charlotte Patterson, I've known for years through our pug connection. And Charlotte is judging the toy group at Westminster this year. And this is your, Charlotte, third or fourth assignment?
Well, this is my sixth guard assignment by my third group.
Awesome. Awesome. Happy New Year from everyone at Trupanion. As breeders, the start of a new year is the perfect time to set resolutions that prioritize what matters most, your puppies and their future. Unexpected accidents and illnesses can happen at any time. But you can ensure your litters and their new families are prepared for whatever comes their way with Trupanion's exclusive 30-day go-home offer. By joining Trupanion's free breeder support program, you can send your puppies home with their own special go-home offer, giving them immediate medical insurance coverage and protecting them from the moment they leave your care. This year, resolve to give yourself and your puppy buyers the ultimate gift of peace of mind as a member of Trupanion's Breeder Support Program. Just stop by the Pure Dog Talk website, puredogtalk.com, go to the partners page, and click the link there. That will let you sign up today and make 2026 the year of happy, healthy pups. Get ready to join us in beautiful Austin, Texas, March 27 to 29 for Pure Dog Talk's Pedigrees to Pups Seminar Weekend with your host, yours truly, teaming up with Dr. Marty Greer. Marty and I have both presented at AKC's Breeder Symposiums and to national audiences around the country. This joint seminar combines a discussion of pedigrees and building a breeding program with down-to-earth veterinary tips on healthy whelping and raising a new litter. We have purposely built a breeding theory and breeding hands-on seminar that creates an all-inclusive understanding of both the art and science of dog breeding. Our goal is full circle mentoring experience in a small group format that creates community and creates opportunities for conversation and connection. Topics cover everything from the foundation bitch, basic health and structure, reading pedigrees, to progesterone timing, semen evaluation, neonates, and a whole lot more. So check out the events tab at puredogtalk.com for more information. Welcome, Charlotte. I hear it's chilly in Florida too. So, So you are from the pug world. That's how I've always known you. And talk to us about how you wound up with our little pug dogs and how that brought you to today, judging your third group at Westminster.
Well, I was visiting a friend in Ohio and walked into her house, and there on her couch was this dog. And I said, "What is that?" And she said, "It's a Chinese pug." I said, "That's the cutest thing I've ever seen." This was in 1969.
Okay.
So she said, "My mother has a litter." And I went, "Oh." So we went to see her mother, and she had one little male left. And she said, "Because you're Mara's friend, I'll let you have him for $200. Well, of course, I didn't have $200. But she said, "Don't worry, you can pay me $50 down to $50 a month." I did. About a year later, unfortunately, that little dog lost his life. So then I went in search of another one and found a breeder in Maryland. I was living in D.C., and she had one little girl left. So I went to visit the little girl, and I said, "Oh, she's adorable." She said, "Well, she's $400. And I said, oh, God, I don't have $400. So she said, don't worry, you can pay me $50 down, $50 a month until she's paid for it. I said, great. So she grew up, and as it turned out, she was fairly well bred. And somebody said, you should breed her. And I went, hot dog, how do I do that? So they gave me a name. Off I went in my little MGB with my little dog sitting in the passenger seat. I didn't know about crates in those days. Mm-hmm. We met this gentleman who had this champion dog. He looked at the pedigree and he said, well, okay, the stud fee's $250. And I said, well, I don't have $250. And he said, well, she's not in season yet. So, you know, you have some time. So I went down to Alabama to visit my mother for Easter break, and she came in season. So I said to my mother, I need to borrow $250. And she said, what for? And I'm sorry to say, I lied to my mother. I said, I need new tires on my car. So she gave me $250. I went home. I bred the bitch. She had five puppies, four finished, and I married the owner of the stud dog.
Okay. Shirley, that is, I have never heard that, and that is fantastic.
True story. True story. And there we were.
Oh my gosh, and there you are. Did you pay your mom back for the $250 stud fee? That's what I need to know. That
that was $250 stud fee. Those days are gone forever, of course.
But yes, still, they are. Yes, they are.
It gave me an introduction to a world that I had no idea existed, none. Mm-hmm. And I will have to say, it was a changing point in my life. You know, I met people and I went places and I saw things that, being a little girl from Alabama, I had never done in my life. It's a life-changing event. It truly was.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It took you to president of the PDCA. You had a toy group winner at Westminster. I mean, I, that's a heck of a ride.
And I must say, that toy group winner at Westminster, I sold as a pet for $250 when he was 4 months old. So remember, we breeders make mistakes too.
So let's talk about that. I love to talk to breeders who really get it. So talk to me about breeding pugs specifically, because pugs are not an easy breed to breed. We know this. Talk to me about how you thought about breeding with your pug dogs.
You know, I think the first thing you have to do is you have to decide what you want.
Yes.
I think a lot of people, when they start, they go out and they just take a bitch and breed it to a dog and have puppies. And I'm sure I probably did that in the beginning too, but I think somewhere along the line, you have to make a decision. This is what I want. That's when the work begins. That's when the research begins. I'm not a big fan of looking at current winners. Mm-hmm. I like to look at what's behind them. I like to look at what they're producing. Right. And some of the best dogs I've ever produced came out of that formula. Right. I wanted a short back dog with a big fat head. I wanted a dog that could move. In those early days, not many toy dogs were great movers.
Right.
We've gotten a lot better. And those were things that were important to me. One of my big pet peeves are light eyes. And if I were to ever have a pug with a light eye, I would be very, very upset, because I think they're very hard to get out once you breed them in. I think breeders need to be very careful when they make decisions about what they are expecting. Mm-hmm. I know lots of people that have bred lots of dogs, and lots of dogs have finished. But you've got to be very careful of what you're doing to your breed. Because what you're doing to your breed later on, somebody's going to pick that up. Mm-hmm. And I remember years ago, we had a dog, an import dog, was used a lot. And he had a very, very dark forehead, not a clean wrinkle pattern. He passed that on to countless pugs. We saw it for generations. And it was not a thing that was pleasing to me. That's not what I wanted. But what an influence that one dog made. And I think this is another thing that breeders need to be very, very aware of. They're dealing with something that's not going to go away in one generation.
Yeah.
It comes back.
Yeah. I mean, it's a sensitive topic, but important. Talk to us about, this is my opinion, when you're breeding brachycephalic breeds, you have to be even more careful, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Talk about this.
This is another problem we're having now in Europe. We're having lots and lots of problems with brachycephalic breeds. And this is another problem. I know that people think that you're probably being overcautious. But, you know, when you're dealing with a living thing, this is something you really, really need to be aware of. Breeding dogs with breathing problems or breeding dogs with those palate problems, I think that's betraying what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Of course, I think that's true of any problem that you have within the breed, not just breathing problems. But I do think that we have right now a good core of dogs.
Yeah,
I judge a lot, and I see lots and lots of dogs that I think have made strides forward. And that's what's important mm-hmm. in any breed.
Yeah,
and that makes me proud. It makes me happy to be able to see that. I have to tell you a funny story. I was judging in California, and this lady put her dog on the table, and I said, you know, Ever the handler, I said, honey, get the front under it. And so she looked at me, so she fixed the front. So when I went to go over the dog, she said to me, have you ever shown a pug? And I said, no, I haven't. So, of course, she goes outside the ring, and everybody outside the ring that knew me said, what did she tell you? What did she say to you? You know how dog people are. And she told them, and they all just, do you know who that is? I will say this. She came back later and apologized. She was very kind. But this is another thing that people, you know, in the breed, they need to be aware of history.
Yes.
I mean, I've probably bred, I don't know, 150 champions. I don't even know. I don't keep up with it anymore. But you need to know what's behind your dogs. You need to know who's behind your dogs.
Yes.
I think that's very important. I think it's very important. It was very sweet.
Honestly, I can't fathom the people who don't know those things. It's a disconnect in my brain, right?
I agree.
You
mentioned somebody that was really, really important in my breed or any breed,
right.
And you get this look of, I mean, it's just like, you know, people come back to talk to the judge. And I will say something, not just in pugs, but in a lot of breeds. And I'll say something about the standard. And oftentimes you get this very blank look on their face, like, is that in my standard? Or maybe what's the standard kind of thing? And that to me is, I can't understand it. I just don't understand. Why would you be involved in something that should be dear to you that is very expensive
yes.
and is very time consuming and can be very heartbreaking? And not avail yourself of mm-hmm. knowledge and what you've chosen to do. I mean, if you were a plumber, you'd know how things work, wouldn't you? Or an air conditioner person or something. Wouldn't that be important that you know how to replace a faucet or a toilet or something like that? Mm-hmm. Why don't people do that in dogs?
Yeah. Reading the standard and understanding pedigrees, I'm doing a lot of work in that area these days, education work, and I'm really grateful to see the number of people who want to learn that. And so that is encouraging to me.
I agree.
That's really exciting. You were a handler. You were a top handler. You very successful. Talk about some of your sort of favorite breeds, favorite dogs, some of the dogs that you worked with as a handler.
Well, of course, I showed a lot of dogs I've bred.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate to have people that owned them that could pay the bills. And that was, I can remember one Best in Show, Steve Shaw, a name from the past, yes. handed me the Best in Show rosette. And he said to me, this is going to surprise a lot of people. And I thought, well, what does that mean? And I never found out, but it was just a thing that happened. And then one time Elaine Young was hot. I was bending over my dog and she said, honey, do you want this rosette or not? So I said, oh yes, ma'am. You know, you have these little things that happen that stick in your memory, a lot of happy things. And sometimes you don't have such happy things. But those are things that make our sport so different from so many other sports. Mm-hmm. You know, you go in at any level you want to, do it every weekend, do 100 shows a year, go once a month. Mm-hmm. Buy an expensive dog and campaign it, buy a dog, bring it home and love it. I just think our sport is unique in that outlook, that you choose mm-hmm. your involvement. And look what you get from it. You get an animal that adores you, that loves you, that puts up with everything. I mean, right now I'm nursing a 15 and a half year old pug that has multiple issues. But I, you know, every day when I give her her medication and I put that food down, the look that she looks up to me like, you are my hero. I love you. Mm-hmm. I mean, God, where else can you can't get that driving a NASCAR. I'll tell you that.
Or playing football. I mean, you know.
Well, Oh, God, let's don't talk about football. Not after the Indiana-Alabama game. Oh, God, don't talk about that. I'm an Alabama girl to the bottom of my toes, and that was hard to watch. Okay,
then they came and obliterated the Ducks, so I'm with you, man.
Oh, my God, I watched that game. Oh, I felt so. There you go.
Oh, my gosh. So, okay. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, you guys, be sure to watch the 150th Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show presented by Purina Pro Plan, February 2nd to 3rd from Madison Square Garden in New York City. The sesquicentennial celebration featuring 2,500 champions representing 202 eligible AKC breeds will feature many special presentations and appearances. The longest nationally televised live dog show will air on FS1 from 7:30 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, February 2nd, with the pre-show beginning at 7 p.m. Group judging of the sporting, working, and terrier groups, followed by Best in Show, will air on FS1 from 7:30 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, February 3rd, with Junior Showmanship Finals at 7 p.m. Purina Pro Plan, the exclusive pet food sponsor of the Westminster Dog Show since 2012, is very proud that the owners and handlers of 18 of the past 19 Best in Show winners have chosen Pro Plan. To learn more about the high-performance nutrition of ProPlan, go to purina.com/ProPlan/dogs. Like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk is here for you to make sense out of everyday things, to add nuance to your understanding and tools to your tech box, to bring history to life and propel the living history of purebred dogs into the future. So, serious observation. What do you guys think I hear more often than crooked judges and professional handlers win everything? I hear a continuing cry for community. So, for folks who are looking to have meaningful conversation, avoid keyboard warriors, and join a welcoming and knowledgeable group, we offer you an option. Forget about spilling the tea. Drink from a well of thoughtful and thought-provoking dog people. Pure Dog Talk patrons support the work we do here by contributing to our crowdsourcing campaign. For as little as $10 a month, you can keep the MP3s rolling here at Pure Dog Talk. You can contribute to the future of purebred dogs by building the fortunes of the Marty and Laura show. You can gain access to a private Facebook group, private After Dark Zoom room, and private Laura Unleashed podcast episodes. Even your own Pure Dog Talk digital badge. Visit puredogtalk.com/patron. to find out how you can join the best community in dogs. Talking about toy breeds specifically, okay, you're judging the toy group. And I've had several people come and do sort of like group overviews and some of this. And I love hearing people talk about their vision, right? Because you and I both know every judge out there has a picture in their head of the perfect one of every breed, right? Whatever your picture is.
You should have a picture.
If you don't have, you should have.
Right.
So let's move to we did the breeding, the handling. Let's move to the judging concept and talk about your visions, right? Like when you look out at that toy group on the Madison Square Garden on the green carpet, like the things that stand out in your mind that you value and treasure in the toy group.
Well, I'm one of those funny judges that when I go into a ring, the first thing I do is move the dogs around. I don't watch them. I think a good handler can make a bad dog look good and a bad handler can make a good dog. So I like to see them go first. Well, I don't have that opportunity at the garden. When I walk in, I have to walk down the line. So, you know, you walk down the line, you look at these, and most of these are dogs that we're all going to know anyway. These are dogs that have been campaigned that are probably going to be there on the floor when there are things happen at the garden, as you know. You know, and a lot of these dogs I probably have seen throughout the last 2 or 3 years. So I think it's a thing of thinking to yourself, what an honor it is to be able to look at this collection of beautiful animals. Of course, you always see ones that you have had that you have done for, and you think, so-and-so made it through and stuff like that.
Right.
And of course, it's of the moment. As you well know, a lot of dogs don't perform well at the garden. They either don't like the television cameras or they don't like the lights or what are their handlers nervous or whatever. And of course, the dogs that do perform are the dogs that you look at a second time. You want everybody to look good. That, to me, should be the ultimate, that they all should go in at the top of their game, perform beautifully, make a wonderful picture for the rest of the world to see, and please my eye.
Absolutely. Thinking about pleasing your eye, coming from pugs, I think heads, right, really, right? It's important in our breed. It's an important feature. Is that something, I think, across the spectrum in the toy group, heads, details are so critical. Talk about how you think about that.
The toy group is a detail group. The terrier group and the toy group are the two detail groups. You've got to be into details. Years ago, I was at a show in New England, and some very officious lady came up to me and said, I'm going to judge your breed in Puerto Rico. In 6 words or less, tell me what your breed is like. And I said, a round head, square body, and a curly tail. And I turned around and walked off. And when you stop and think, that's what we're looking for in my breed. I want a big, fat head, of course, but I don't want a head that's out of balance. Balance is very important in toy breeds. Very important. If these dogs with elongated necks or these dogs that are too long, they're out of balance. That's not what they're supposed to be. Once again, know the standard. Know what it calls for. Recently, I was judging beavers somewhere, and you know, these days we have to pick beavers up and check their paws in the belly. But when I came out of the ring, this young girl, she must have been about 12 or 13, she said, why didn't you pick the rest of them up? And I thought to myself, why didn't I pick the rest of them up? Once in a while, these little things go through your brain, you know. I was talking to somebody the other day. I've been judging 35 years.
Yeah.
And I said, let's say conservative, that I see 2,000 dogs a year. I'm sure I see more than, but let's just say, you realize that 70,000 dogs I've had my hands on. I know any idiot ought to be able to learn from 70,000 dogs. So one would hope that I have an eye for what pleases me. So,
you know, and I think having kind of followed a similar path as you did, it's important for folks to understand how many dogs, I mean, not just as a judge, but as a handler. Right? We form the images that are the, like, you know, the Rolodex pops up to chin, or the, you know, the Rolodex pops up to Pekingese, right?
You not only form it, you refine it. Mm-hmm. You know, when we all start out, we think, okay, this is what we want. And over the years, we, those of us that are really passionate about this, ought to be able to refine that image, to get that image down in your head to be the one that makes you happy. I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And you talked a little bit earlier about toy dogs and movement, which is an interesting topic of conversation for a lot of toy judges.
Lots of people.
I personally think they need to be able to at least make it to the food bowl.
Oh, I think they need to go further than that.
I agree. But talk to us about your thinking in this area.
I think we need to breed dogs that are sound, that are structurally made right. Mm-hmm. One of the big problems in the toy ring is these handlers all run them like crazy. Toy dogs aren't meant to be run. These are companion dogs. These are dogs that are by your side. These are dogs that sit in your lap. These are not working dogs, herding dogs. And I do. I say, you know, not so fast, slow down. And I'm very kind. But I do think that a lot of, for example, you take a breed like Pug. This is a square breed. It should never be moved so fast that it should converge to the center of gravity.
Right.
That's too fast.
Right.
These are four little legs that ought to go in straight lines here. And I think a lot of handlers, particularly handlers that maybe haven't handled a lot of toy dogs, make that mistake. I want them to move. I'm not going to put up a dog that obviously is not able to, as you say, go to the food bowl, but I think they ought to go further than that. But You know, look at your standard. What does your standard say about that?
And movement is breed type, right? So the way a chin moves is different than a way a pug moves, right? So
look at a min pin.
Right.
Would you have a min pin without that hackney gait? Right. No, right. You wouldn't. These are things that make them what they are. Mm-hmm. These are the things that we should appreciate about every breed.
Right. And the idea of preservation breeding is we're preserving the uniqueness of each of these breeds.
Of these breeds, each breed. Exactly right. I agree.
Okay. Talk to us. You were president of the Pug Dog Club of America. National Club presidents have a lot of jobs and a lot of roles. And we're seeing kind of in today's sport right now, lots of strife, lots of loggerheads. I think as we transition a lot of the old to the new and some of that kind of stuff, offer some thoughts, some words of wisdom about working in a club and the difficulties and ways that that can be, you know, smoothed out a little bit so that we're encouraging people to join our clubs.
Well, I think when you get a national club, the Pug Club has like 400 and some members, and you elect a board of 12 or whatever your board happens to be, it behooves them to, of course, keep in touch with the membership. But it also, the membership should be aware of what the board is doing. You know, a lot of times you go to the general meeting, there'll be 50 people there. There'll be 150 people at the bar.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you don't know what your board is doing, then how can you complain about what it is doing? Right now, we have a very active board in the Pug Club, and they're moving forward in a lot of ways. I think probably a lot of people run for things, not just pug stuff, but other things, and thinking, oh, this is a seat of power. Mm-hmm. If you're truly, truly invested in our sport, it's not a seat of power. It's a seat of work. Believe me, I was club president for 12 years, and I worked the whole time. My phone never stopped ringing. Of course, my phone doesn't stop ringing now, but my phone never stopped ringing. And these are things that you have to be aware of. Cost you money. You have to go to meetings. You have to participate in this. Cost you money. These are things that you should say, okay, I dedicate myself to this term, or I'm going to do this. It's like anything else that you feel like you can make a commitment to and you can do something for.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about any strategies that you can recommend for people who are new to the breed or to the club to help them become more involved and find a way to work with, we've always done it this way, right? Like that's a thing. And these people are like, why can't we do it this way, right? So talk about that a little bit.
And that's an issue, I think, with a lot of new people. And that's, once again, that's where your board has to keep in touch with the current population and take the temperature of the current membership. And of course, I think anybody that's new that gets involved, they've got to find somebody that they trust that they like and that can help them. Everybody needs a mentor. You don't go into this and spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars without some kind of input from somebody. And that, to me, is very important. Who you choose to be your mentor. Very important. You want to choose somebody that, first of all, is a member of the Pug Dog Club of America. I think it's very important that they've made that commitment. But you also want to use somebody that is middle of the road. You don't want somebody that is so powerful that they're going to tell you exactly what to do, or somebody that's so weak that doesn't give you anything. You want somebody that's going to be there to support you, to be able to tell you, yeah, you did a great job, or, well, I would have done that differently. And anytime you get involved in anything new, you're going to make mistakes. We all do. Mm-hmm. And you have to go into it knowing that. You're going to breed a litter and they're all going to be pets. You're going to breed a litter and you're going to have two or three good ones. Mm-hmm. You're going to go to a show and win a major, and the next day you're going to go last place. But these are things that you have to be aware of. These are going to happen. I mean, the worst thing that can probably happen to anybody, and I've seen it over and over again, is for somebody to go in and be immediately successful, to do lots of big winning with their first dog. Mm-hmm. And that gives them a skewed outlook of what the future brings.
That is so on point. Is so on point. Okay, so you are a seasoned veteran of judging at Westminster Kennel Club. What is your favorite moment and what kind of, I won't say makes you nervous, you don't get nervous, but you know what I'm saying. What kind of is a struggle for you still?
The very first group I did the non-sporting group. And I can remember walking out on the floor and I turned around and the show chairman, Ron Miniker, said, "You're on your own, kid." And I can remember that instant standing there, you know, how many times had I exhibited there, how many times had I been, just stand, that instant sort of really caught me in my throat. The very first time I did a breed of the garden, I did Pucks. That was my first breed. And when they played the Star Spangled Banner and I stood up, I cried. I mean, I really, really got emotional. But then I did Men Pins after that and put up a dog that wasn't a big winner at the time. And all of a sudden there was this hullabaloo outside the ring. And I said to the handler, "What was that?" And she said, "It's the owner of this dog. He just fainted." And he had, and he had, they had to get the EMTs in to get him.
Oh, my God. You know, it's a pretty big deal when you cause somebody to faint, Charlotte. I'm just...
I just stood there. I thought, "Oh, God, I hope he's all right." But it was true. You can ask the handler. She will tell you. It was Kim.
Oh, my God. And
I remember his name was Howard or something. Like, he's long gone now. But she said, "Oh, he just fainted." So, there you go. But that's that very first time that I judged a breed. And I was in that ring. My husband was outside watching me. All these people I'd known for years were outside the ring. I just felt so honored to be the one standing there in the middle.
Yeah.
I just thought, how lucky am I?
Yeah.
How fortunate am I that I'm in this group of people and in this sport that I can have this honor? Pretty impressed.
Well, you have accomplished a great deal, Charlotte, from that one little litter that you borrowed $250 from your mom for a stud fee.
So. Lied to my mama. Lied to my mom.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, Charlotte, I will see you in New York. I am thrilled. Yeah. I know. I am thrilled for you and look forward to watching you judge the group.
Thanks so much. I've enjoyed talking to you so much. Thanks for including me.
Thanks, Charlotte. All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life. You know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.